Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
As a true football fan, you already know that just as sure as the seasons change, Tom Brady and Drew Brees could lose playoff games for their respective teams and get zero blame for it whatsoever, unlike the Ben Roethlisbergers of the world. Every weekend, our favorite gridiron warriors put their skills to the test, so why aren't you doing the same? It's time to get in the game, everybody. There's only a couple weeks left, and the place to go is MyBookie, because it's the premier place to bet on all your favorite pro and college football action every single weekend. They have the most up-to-date lines, they got prop bets, and they let you do parlays. So if you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, you can use those parlays. Pick your locks for the week, put them together in one parlay bet, and when they all come through, the rewards will be huge. If you're tired of watching the games from the couch, well, there's not much I can do for you football-wise, but my bookie will make you feel like you're in the game because you got some scoots riding on the outcome. The best part is, if you join right now, my bookie will double your first deposit. That's right, if you put in $1,000, they'll give you $1,000. That's double your initial deposit, and you can use it on all your favorite picks. Use the promo code CHAIR chair to activate the offer. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid.
Bitter taste remains. The detritus of an unfulfilled dream, intensified by the continuance of a Super Bowl pursuit that we must watch, or at best, ignore. But stretching before us on the distant horizon, the sun's corona pierces the nighttime shroud, and rays of hope cause us to shade our eyes as we cast an expectant glance toward 2020. Welcome to the Steelers Outpost Podcast, a proud member of the Armchair All-Americans Network. It is January 5th, 2020. This is Tom coming to you from the Sawdust Studios near Washington, D.C., and Nick joins me from the Houston Outpost. Hello, Nicholas.
Hello.
Ah, quite an empty day. There is a lot of football, right? But it's tough. But I will say, there's some wild games going on. Two overtime games. We've just seen the completion of the Minnesota Saints game. 26-20 in overtime. And I guess that was a reference.
Sacrilegious for us to watch that thing, and like we watch the Steelers games cross country, but it was too good to ignore. I was going to say something right when you queued me up. I don't remember what you said before we went into the playoff games, but I guess we can kind of talk about some of them because they have been pretty exciting so far. And I guess we can note that I think all Steelers fans, you know the drill. We root against the Patriots. We root against the Ravens. After that's taken care of, we root against the Niners, and we root against the Cowboys, who are closest to the Steelers in total Super Bowl victories. My girlfriend is asleep over here in the other room, and she is a big Seahawks fan. So we do root for the Seahawks. Obviously not to the same extent as the Steelmen, but we enjoy watching Russell Wilson play. But secretly, as Steelers fans, we root against the Seahawks, because if they get a Super Bowl, Russell Wilson gets the same number as Ben. So I guess we want Kirk Cousins and the Vikings to get one?
Because he'll never get one again?
Chiefs. We want the Chiefs. Mahomes can get one.
He just seems likely to get more than one. No. We want a tie in the Super Bowl. But so speaking of exciting games, Houston over Buffalo in overtime, 22-19. One of the weirder scores I've ever seen, the 19-19 at the end of regulation.
Right.
But that started out like Josh Allen had sold his soul to the devil.
Yeah, and then Josh Allen just became Josh Allen. And we remember that he can't hit the broadside of a barn, whether it's 10 feet away or 80 yards. He'll be able to throw it past the barn, but he won't be able to hit it.
If you look at the highlights, I'm still trying to figure out how Houston won that game. Deshaun Watson was sacked 7 times. But that, I think, what was that near the end of the third quarter? He got that touchdown run, just carrying 3 guys on him into the end zone.
Here's what this game came down to is the Bills are a better team than the Texans in every way. And we won't spend too much time on other teams, but it's definitely worth covering because as Steelers fans, we can relate to a lot of this. But the Bills are better than the Texans at basically every position, but the Texans have Superman at quarterback. Deshaun Watson is unstoppable, and he has one of the greatest receivers in the game, if not the best right now, with Hopkins. J.J. Watt somehow is still good, and they got those 3 studs, and the rest of the team is crap. Kenny Stills is all right. Will Fuller is Martavis Bryant II. He's their receiver, but he never plays, and he didn't play in this game. He adds a lot when he plays, but there's really no excuse for the Bills, and it just kind of shows you that Josh Allen, who knows what his career is going to be. To me, you and I were talking about it. He's like a poor man's Cam Newton, but the difference is, you know, Cam Newton also big, also runs well using that size, has a cannon arm, is inaccurate, but Cam at least can get hot, and he dragged crappy teams a number of times throughout his career, whether people like him or not, that's the truth. And Josh Allen pretty much fell apart to the point where you pointed out yesterday. I mean, he had a big run in the fourth quarter and just inexplicably tries to lateral the ball at the end of the play. I mean, the dude, he freaked out, and Deshaun Watson literally put the other team on his back and figuratively put the Texans on his back because he's just unbelievable, man. I mean, just making play after play.
So the only other thing I'll save up this game before we bore our audience with it, I advise you, and maybe you can tweet this out, Nick, because I included a couple of pictures on the show notes. Look at Trent Murphy, and then look at Tyler Matakevich, and just tell me if you see a resemblance. And so last night, Tennessee 20, New England 13. Derrick Henry, 182 yards rushing. Where do the Patriots rank in terms of rushing defense? I'm looking that up while you do.
Here's the thing. Here's the season with the Patriots. This kind of became apparent, I think, to a lot of people when they lost to the Dolphins at home in the last week of the season. Ironically, that came after their best game of the season where they beat Buffalo and the Patriots offense actually looked good. But here it is. Nobody can admit that Drew Brees and Tom Brady are still really good, but not as good as they were 2 or 3 years ago. They both have physical limitations with their arm. They can't make all the different throws that they used to be able to make, whether that's over the middle of the field or deep outs or even long bombs. They're still really good, but whenever you tell anybody that they've declined, nobody can accept it. They're like, oh, so 6 Super Bowls. Like, I didn't say anything about 2001. I said right now, as a 42-year-old, he doesn't have the juice. Now, if he had Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown and Gronk on the team, they'll be in the Super Bowl this year. But the bottom line is they don't have a lot of talent on offense, and Brady isn't at the level of his career where he can just carry them anymore. So it's no surprise that their offense sucked. As far as rushing defense goes, it's not as good as their pass defense because their pass defense was phenomenal. But I said this the entire year long. The Patriots have a really good defense, but people talking about them as like an all-time great defense, that blew my mind. They played like a historically soft schedule. Unbelievable. Like, they played the Steelers in the first game, kicked the crap out of us. They played the Dolphins, you know, before the Dolphins got their stuff together. Jets twice. Redskins, Giants, Cowboys, Eagles, Bills twice, who are a good team, but they can't score more than 14 points in a game. And the only time the Patriots played halfway decent offenses throughout the course of the year, they got blown out of the gym by the Ravens and by the Chiefs. So I knew, but I had a feeling this year that by the time the playoffs came along, it would be hard for them to hang in the game. And the Titans didn't even play that great, but they're just a balanced team. And yeah, Derrick Henry is a man among boys. I don't even think he's human. He's like 6'8", 400 pounds. He runs a 4.4.
So the Titans only had 76 yards passing. You're right. So Patriots rank 2nd in terms of passing, but 6th in terms of rushing defense. But you know what was
again,
was wild?
But those stats are like, it's hard to contextualize those because they played such bad teams, you know?
True. It's true. Well, I guess you know what sort of illustrated that was The Titans, sorry, this is on offense. The Patriots had a first down on the Tennessee 1 yard line and weren't able to score a touchdown. That was sort of endemic of their lack of offensive punch.
Well, you know what's cool about that is they basically ran the same play, like an off-tackle play, twice in a row to Sony Michel. And Rashawn Evans, the middle linebacker for the Titans, burst through and made the tackle twice in a row. Rashawn Evans was the guy we spent a ton of time on 2 years ago. He's the middle linebacker when we were hoping that the Steelers would be able to draft him. He wasn't as good as, who were the other guys? It was the dude from Georgia who plays for the Bears, Roquan Smith. And I think maybe one of the guys was out that year. And we were like, hey, Rashawn Evans, he might not be as good as Roquan or as good as the Devins would be the year after. So thank goodness we ended up with Bush. But it was pretty cool to see, hey, that guy looks like he's a pretty big stud. So, yeah, the Patriots are out. It is likely, by the way, anybody who's hearing anything about this, it looks likely that Tom Brady will be playing for a different team next year. There have been rumors of that the entire year. And he sold his house in New England. He didn't re-sign. His contract is up. He has a stipulation in his contract that they are not allowed to franchise tag him. And he hasn't signed a new deal. And then people have been speculating about that all year. And at first I thought, like, oh, whatever, man. He's just probably leveraging them for more money. And that still might be what he's doing. But even at the press conference last night, the reporters asked him directly if this was his last game, and he kept talking about everything in the past tense. Like, I loved my time here. I cherished my time here so deeply. I'll remember this forever, et cetera, et cetera. He was very intentionally making a statement that, like, hey, I might not be here next year. And I don't know if that's leveraging for more money, but it does look like, man, he might try to, you know, I don't know why he would want to get out of New England, but it looks like it's really happening. So is the dynasty over? Never. Bill Belichick's still there. If they could get a good quarterback over there and a good receiver, they'd probably be right back in it. But overall, it may be reaching the end here.
And then we just we actually delayed doing this podcast because we're hanging on to the Minnesota-New Orleans game, which you referred to in the intro. Minnesota pulling it out in overtime, 26-20. Kirk Cousins with a couple of, I don't know how long those passes were, 40 yards to...
That was, yeah, I don't know, 54. He threw the, I mean, you feel so good for Kirk Cousins. He literally has, like, never won a night game in his entire career. And I guess that stands true because it was an afternoon game. But I guess all I want to say about that game, you feel good for Kirk Cousins scoring. But for Steelers fans watching that, Drew Brees fumbled on the potential game-winning drive the second to last time they got the ball in the fourth quarter with 3 minutes and 45 seconds to go. At that point, of course, you know that the media members are already writing their story about how surely how bad the offensive line was on that play, and they made Drew fumble, and it was their fault, and it couldn't be Drew Brees' fault because you remember last year in the NFC Championship game, he got hosed by the refs not calling a pass interference call. The NFL then changed the rules to make sure that he could get that pass interference call later. It didn't matter because he threw the game-losing interception on the opening drive of overtime later. But that's neither here nor there. And you actually check the record books, that's been officially erased from the record books. So anyways, today, when you and I were watching it, Drew Brees fumbles, 3:45 left, and I guess Randy Feitner snuck into the building and put on a purple polo shirt and started calling plays for the Vikings because they tried to run the clock out against the Saints, who I think had three timeouts, at least two, plus the two-minute warning. They tried to run the clock out with 3 minutes and 45 seconds instead of being aggressive. You're up by three in the playoffs against Drew Brees, as much as I was making fun of him. Obviously, he's Drew Brees. I'm just making fun of the fact that him and Brady never can do anything wrong. And if Ben Roethlisberger fumbled, it would be the end of the world, you know. But you try to run the clock out with 4 minutes left. How many times have we seen this with the Steelers doing the same thing? And then, long story short, the Saints tie it, of course. That's a foregone conclusion. And miraculously, Kirk Cousins wins the game in overtime with a 60-yard pass to Thielen, right? And then, oh gosh, actually, this is even funnier. So they're on the goal line here, right? The Vikings to win the game and advance in the playoffs. And Kevin Stefanski, who I think is actually Randy Feitner, I've realized doing this podcast, he had called a goal line set of plays in the fourth quarter that did not work. It was a run up the middle that got stuffed. And then he pitched the ball to the left to Dalvin Cook, their MVP player, and they lost 5 yards. He called the exact same plays again. And guess what? He got the exact same result. They got stuffed on the first one, and they lost 4 yards on the pitch. And then luckily, Kirk Cousins throws just sort of like a back corner fade to Kyle Rudolph, who has a little bit of a push off. And you know, up here comes everybody saying the Saints got hosed by the refs again because of a little push off on Kyle Rudolph. Twitter's already blowing up with that sentiment. And I'm sitting there thinking, like, you're right. It just, how can the Saints beat the refs? I mean, forget the fact that the coach grossly misused the clock when the Vikings were trying to run the clock down. Sean Payton let 38 seconds run off instead of calling a timeout. Forget that Drew Brees fumbled on the game-winning drive. And it's honestly not that big of a deal that they gave up a 60-yard pass play on the opening play of the fifth play of overtime. All that stuff is neither here nor there. The refs, I feel terrible for them. It's so sad.
Let's move on to some good news. I know this isn't a playoff win, but the Steelers put a few guys on the All-Pro team, first team and second team. It's interesting. So for the Steelers, T.J. Watt as the edge rusher, Minkah Fitzpatrick as a safety. Who am I missing? Cam Hayward, interior lineman.
Yeah.
So unfortunately, I know this is a little shot in forward. The Ravens had five first team All-Pros, and they had two guys on the second team.
Well, and Deontay Johnson made second team All-Pro as a punt returner, and somehow T.J. Watt made the second team as well. He made the first team as an edge rusher and the second team as a linebacker. That seems a little weird to me. But I love Deontay Johnson. I think that he has definitely at least some Pro Bowls in his future as wide receiver. I didn't quite think he was a All-Pro punt returner yet. I think maybe next year after a whole season, sure. But it seems to me like he just had the – anybody who listens to this podcast knows how much I was begging for Deontay to be returning punts all year. But he had the one punt return for a touchdown. Other than that, he didn't have that many long ones. But I'm happy to see him get the All-Pro. It looks like Minkah Fitzpatrick, you couldn't make a trade any better than that, can you? For the 18th pick in the 2020 draft, the Steelers get an immediate All-Pro who has 4 years left on his deal.
Hey, so the other thing, you think it was interesting that TJ was on both the first and the second team. I do. That is a little odd. But maybe this isn't as odd, but Christian McCaffrey had two spots on the first team. One is the first running back and the only flex player chosen.
But it is pretty cool that these guys got elected to All-Pro. They completely deserved it. You know, we've even talked about some of the Pro Bowl stuff. That is really fanfare. There is a lot of politics and just people who have bigger names getting into the Pro Bowl. But the All-Pro is a real honor. And it's actually a little bit more legitimate. So there are still some funky things that happen. Like, for instance, Bill Polian, who for some reason still is allowed to provide football opinions. There were three people who didn't vote Lamar Jackson as the first team All-Pro quarterback. And Bill Polian is one. If you remember him, he is the 114-year-old former GM who said vehemently throughout the draft process that Lamar Jackson should be a receiver, which I think has resulted in that whole narrative of like, hey, look at all those people who hated on Lamar Jackson and thought he should be a receiver. You think he should be a receiver now? And my response is like, it was just Bill Polian. I think the rest of us all thought like, hey, yeah, Lamar could be a really good quarterback. I don't know what the hell that's all about. But yeah, so that just demonstrates there is some goofiness on the All-Pro voting as well. But for the most part, it's pretty accurate. Big honor. Aaron Donald and Cam Hayward together. We're taking credit for Aaron Donald, too, is what I'm trying to say, as the interior lineman.
So in other, not non-football, but non-playing football accolades, the Hall of Fame candidates, the final candidates have been announced. So we have Troy Polamalu, Alan Faneca, and in the old guy category. Is Faneca in the old guy category?
Well, he might be.
Donnie Shell is definitely in the old guy category.
So we can go all through these one by one. Troy just seems like one of those guys where it's like, do you have to nominate him? Or should you just say there's five guys who can get a spot this year and Troy's in? That sort of feels like the shooting fish in a barrel, doesn't it? With Troy Polamalu. Not only was he one of the best players ever, had great stats, but just, you know, visually, he was the face of the Steelers defense for those three Super Bowl runs and for a lot of years and just such an individually unique player. And you just, I'm sorry, there are no better safeties than Troy Polamalu and Ed Reed. And if you want to have the debate about them, then you're a fool, because they basically play different positions. Troy was a strong safety who moved all over the field and was used as a chess piece. Ed Reed is the traditional center fielder. And Ed just got in last year, and Troy's going to get in this year. That's great. I will say this one thing. It is such a bummer the way that his relationship – it reminds me of Terry Bradshaw, where they don't have good relationships with the Steelers anymore. I saw Troy accepting an award. I don't know if it was for like a Samoan Hall of Fame thing or a collegiate Hall of Fame type deal, but he won't even say the Pittsburgh Steelers. He referred to himself as a Samoan, a USC Trojan, and an NFL player. And that just bums me out so thoroughly. It doesn't affect my support of him. He's Troy. I love him. It was just, you would like to see if they'd be able to mend that fence a little. He's still angry at the Steelers for kind of forcing him into an early retirement, which does suck. But
yeah, and they don't go in with their team, right? I mean, they don't go in designated with their team necessarily, which I guess you almost can't.
They do. Yeah, you have to designate a particular team when you go into the Hall of Fame. And so you know there's going to be an incident when Peyton Manning gets in, because I could see him being a douche and going in for the Broncos. And it's like, dude, you were the Colts quarterback. You were the Colts quarterback. You played for the Broncos for a little while at the end and had an unbelievable season, and then got dragged to the Super Bowl in your last year. But I know he's still angry at the Colts for making the smartest move ever and letting him go and drafting Andrew Luck. But yeah. Luckily, there's no choice there. Troy's going in as a Steeler.
So, you know how you have something at the office, you have this to-do list, and there's something that's relatively important but isn't going to explode if you don't get it done today, and it always seems to fall to the bottom of the list. That's what Alan Faneca's choice seems to me. He's always on a list with people who've done more and who sort of you can't pass up.
If you ask me, I think there are four players that we have seen in the modern Steelers. And I'm saying since 2000, I think there are four players who should be Hall of Fame locks, and that's Troy Polamalu, Ben Roethlisberger, Alan Faneca, and this one's a little weird because you might have screwed it up now, but Douche McGee, a.k.a. Antonio Brown. Those four players were truly the most dominant players on a consistent basis, and they carried their teams at a certain point. Obviously, Faneca's a lineman, but what did he have, like 10 consecutive All-Pros? He's just always one of the best guards in the league. I even think guys like the Bus and Hines, I'd love to see Hines get in. I don't think he's going to, but like there was never really any point where the Bus or Hines were like a top five player at their position in the league. So I can understand how they wouldn't get in, because there's other guys who get in. Now, if you're listening to this and you hate me, I love those guys. I adore them. But if I'm looking at just trying to be objective of who the most dominant players were, Faneca's one of those guys, you know? And maybe DeCastro will end up there too. If he keeps up another 3-4 years of this, I would say the same thing. It's like when you dominate every single year in the league, it's just sad to see that he can't get into the Super or into the Hall of Fame because the low profile of offensive linemen.
And Donnie Shell won't make, because they just begrudge adding more Steelers in the 70s.
Legitimately, that's what it is. Now, I didn't get to see him play, and I know you weren't, you know, taking stats at that point, but his numbers are pretty incredible. He's a 3-time All-Pro, 5-time Pro Bowler, Steelers MVP in 1980 or something like that, and kind of generally considered in Pittsburgh to be one of those guys who should be in the Hall of Fame. But there's sports writers out there, like Peter King has said publicly, who's a Hall of Fame voter, that he just refuses to vote for any more 70s Steelers. And to me, that's just asinine. These guys take way too many liberties with the Hall of Fame. Not letting Terrell Owens in the first year, it's just the most BS thing I've ever heard. Oh, he was annoying. What? He was annoying while being one of the most dominant 5 or 10 receivers that we've ever seen in the NFL. This is for the best football players. Don't get cute with it. In the 70s, there was no salary cap, so you could just lock together an unbelievable team forever. Like, if there wasn't a salary cap now, the Steelers would still have Bell, Brown. They could still have Mike Wallace, who was great when he was on the Steelers. You'd have all kinds of guys still playing on the team. And so I know you don't like that there's a lot of guys from that team, but just the bottom line was they had a lot of Hall of Famers. That's why they won a bunch of Super Bowls. So that's a bummer. Yeah, I don't know if he's going to get in. Maybe it would I don't want to jinx him, but like it seems like they let those guys in when they die now. Like Ken Stabler, once he died, they let him in after making him wait for forever. So maybe we hope that Donnie gets in later.
What you were saying, I just want to do a quick rerun. You were talking about you're not sure how Deontay Johnson got that second team All-Pro, and I was looking at the stats. You know, these things are so over the map. Not a ton of guys have like a credible number of returns. But in terms of guys who have returned the ball at least 10 times, and Deontay had 20 times, he has the highest average. And he has the longest, I don't know if one touchdown.
Yeah.
You know, 85 return. It was the longest return last of the season. So between having the highest average and the TD, maybe you think they pick him because of that?
Yeah, just there are tons of guys.
Well, there are tons of guys who had more yardage than him, so I don't know how they judge those things.
Yeah, but you'd probably care more about the average. I mean, hey, I think Deontay Johnson can be the best punt returner in the whole league. I love him, but I was just surprised to see a guy who only returned punts for like half the year get the honor. And that's kind of what I figured, too. I'm like, there must be not another like obvious guy on there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, from a talent perspective, yeah, I totally agree. I was just surprised to see it, happily surprised. And by the way, I don't want Donnie Shell to die ever at any point in the future. But I was just pointing out sort of how the Hall of Fame operates, right? And the bias in the Hall of Fame and how I think that they need to reorganize the voters. And it should really just be coaches. I don't know why writers are voting on this. It's kind of ridiculous, isn't it? Like, because that's two reasons. Like, they didn't let Jake the Snake in. Wait, Jake the Snake. I'm thinking Jake Plummer. Ken Stabler in, and then he dies, and then they let him in right after. It's like, aren't we seeing a direct correlation there? It wasn't just because, like, oh, well, you know what? Actually, he's better than all the candidates now. If you get buried on that list, there's amazing players coming out into the pool every single year, so you're just never going to get back into it unless there's some sort of social thing that occurs, and that's kind of annoying.
So let's talk about free agency. And there are quite a number of starters and significant backups that are in free agency for the Steelers next year.
Yes.
And let's talk about, you know, whether you think they'll be back, whether we would prefer that they be back. And the highest paid free agent next year is Vance McDonald, $6.5 million.
Yeah, and it takes like 5 points something off the cap, I believe, if they release him. And yeah, so we will definitely get very deep into the weeds on all of this stuff in future podcasts. Today, we just figured we'd sort of take a kind of truncated version, look at the NFL playoffs, see how some of those games relate to the Steelers, and maybe take an early look at some of these free agents. And we actually do have a little bit more information than we thought we'd have, because Mike Tomlin, in his press conference last week, stressed that Bud Dupree is going to be a priority in free agency. And we try to make a habit on this podcast of admitting when we are wrong about a take. Like we said a number of times during the course of this year that, I mean, I know I definitely said it, that I never thought Bud Dupree would pan out to be as good as he is now. And to our credit, we did say a lot before the season that he'd be a serviceable starting defensive edge player and he would probably kind of luck into around 10 sacks. I'd be curious to look back at that podcast. I think you and I predicted that he would get more than 10 sacks. But I said it was because, you know, he would go on stunts and stuff like that. But either way, what I'm trying to say is we'll admit when we're wrong about something. We'll also admit when we're right. We have been saying the word on the street, and just based on the simple mathematics, is it's going to be very difficult to keep Bud, especially if somebody else pays him a ton of money. But we have also said the Steelers historically are pretty incredible about keeping their star players, especially when they say they want to keep him. Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell were sort of weird cases. And then if you look back at like whether all the receivers, Plaxico or Sanders or Wallace, those guys were receivers getting overpaid in free agency who they didn't have a problem replacing pretty much immediately after they left. So if Tomlin says they're going to keep Bud, there's a chance that they'll be able to. But if they're going to, they're going to have to release a bunch of these veteran guys like McDonald. I do think Foster might be a foregone conclusion at this point right now, even though you've made the point that he doesn't save us money. When we're talking about Vance McDonald, I just can't see them releasing him because they don't have another tight end on the roster besides Gentry, because Vanette's a free agent as well. And I think Steelers fans might be like, oh, Vance is always injured. He sucks. I think the Steelers know that they can't go in with zero tight ends and think that they're gonna someone's going to slide to them in the draft and they'll be able to go into the year like that. And I think that they assume Vance will make some sort of comeback next year with Ben on the field, hopefully with a healthy elbow. So I don't know. It's like, can you sign Bud without getting rid of Vance and these other free agents? And would they get rid of Vance? I don't know. It's murky, but.
Well, I'd like to keep Vance, not just because I like him. We go out for beers once in a while, but because right. I think he's effective. And yeah, he has missed a lot of games. But the problem from my standpoint is they just don't use the tight end for anything other than blocking. And I'll bet you can go out and get another Vinette. You know, Vinette's up, but he costs nothing. You can get him. You could probably re-sign him or somebody of his ilk. You could just get another blocking tight end, and maybe you hope we just don't throw the ball to the tight end anymore.
You'd think that, but they're not. Those blocking tight ends aren't as readily available as they used to be with the advance of like spread offenses in college. A lot of the tight ends are these move kind of tight ends who are more pass catchers, and when it comes to blocking, Vance is top of the food chain. I mean, he's not the best blocking tight end in the NFL, but he is one of them. So even if you want to use the tight end for running, he's going to help you do that a lot. And you can't judge what the Steelers do offensively really whatsoever from this year. They're going to get him the ball more. I agree with you. It's like, I mean, he used Heath a ton. Even in his old age, they threw to Heath a lot on those little check down routes over the middle. And it was frustrating last year with Vance because he'd have huge games, like one huge game and then two games where he'd only have two or three catches. But I think they will use him. And I don't know. I mean, part of me agrees with you on being able to find tight ends. Like, the Seahawks do it. They're down to their fourth tight end right now, and Jacob Hollister, and he's the best. Vinette was one of their tight ends. They had Will Disley and then Ed Dixon. They're literally on their fourth tight end, and this guy's like a really good player. So they seem to have no problem doing it, but the Steelers have had some pretty high profile failures. What if there's some way that Jesse James gets cut? I say this with zero knowledge of their cap situation and the implications of cutting Jesse James, except for knowing that he only had 13 catches and no touchdowns all year. That would be a Steelers move to bring him back.
Tweet it out. Start the rumor.
I'm not even going to look up the cap implications.
Look, there are a lot of painful decisions when you do put together a roster, obviously. And nobody wants to lose him. It is a question of, is he effective? Yes. But I guess they have to do the math. How many games is he going to play? How much can you, what percentage of Vance can you replace with somebody who will be there all season? So just moving on to another big enigma is B.J. Finney, who's also probably due for a really big contract and could start on a lot of other teams. I don't know how much capital you put into retaining him. Although, well, like I said last week, though, what makes me really nervous that we're getting thinner and thinner. You talk about losing Ramon.
Yeah, agreed.
And, I think the idea that you were talking about and a lot of people are talking about is moving Filer to guard and bringing in Finney as a starter. So,
well, not Finney. No. Finney would be gone. They'd move Filer to guard and they put Chooks or Banner at starting tackle. But my other thought is that you might use that second round pick on a lineman and then try and get that guy as the starting tackle or starting guard or to be the backup tackle to groom behind Chooks or Banner. You're basically playing some musical chairs with the line, which sounds bad, but that might not be horrible if Chooks is advancing like they expected him to when they drafted him in the third round. I mean, that's the kind of player. Third round is kind of another round where you think, hey, this guy's going to be a developmental starter at some point. So it's so weird because we always thought that Finney would just plug right in right after Foster, but the Steelers coaches kind of made it clear that they don't trust him like that because when Foster missed some games, they played musical chairs and put Filer. It's so annoying that they all have F names, by the way, that they put Filer from tackle into that guard spot and then put Chooks.
Did Fietner put Filer there?
Oh, my gosh. Did Fietner put Filer, Foster, or Finney in the final guard spot? I don't know, man. But, yeah, I think that they showed their hand. I think that Finney might be good as gone, which I hate because he's such a good utility player. So who knows? That's the interesting thing is you can play some chess with this stuff. I don't think I don't feel comfortable about the Steelers letting Vance go and just starting that position from scratch. They did that this year. You remember we kept saying like the only real hole on the roster is like maybe safety. They fixed that. And tight end. And it never got fixed. The tight end thing didn't get fixed this year. So you're going to take the best one off the team and think that you can fix it again next year? I don't think they're going to be comfortable with that. But all of this depends on the initial moves in free agency, what other teams are offering Bud, which might affect who we can keep, and then who's available in the draft.
So we spent a lot of time on Javon Hargrave. I don't think anybody thinks sees a pathway to him. So the other critical guy, and we did mention, is Mike Hilton, who was looking for money last year, stayed, you know, obviously in his last year of his contract. What do you do with Hilton?
I held on to him for dear life. You know what? I think that the Steelers also have had plans to replace him. As long as you have Nelson and Hayden, I mean, Artie Burns is going to be gone. You drafted Justin Lane last year, who terrifies me. But Cameron Sutton has got to be it. He's got to get on the field. He was phenomenal whenever he was in the game this year. So I would almost think that they're going to put him at the slot. And this is why you draft. Like, there are certain players that you just have to lose, and you have to have people in the pipeline. So I don't know how much he's going to get. Would I like to see him stay? Of course. I want every Steeler we have right now to stay. I mean, this is a really good team. But I would think when you look at these things, I try to look if there's, like, a pipeline for the next player there. And with Sutton there, there's definitely a next guy. And with Lane, that's what they drafted him to do. I don't know if I'm comfortable with it, but yeah, I don't know. It sucks because they're so deep at corner this year where they could lose two corners and have guys go in and you'd be okay.
Did you hear what you just said? Could you imagine ever having made that statement in the last 10 years?
I know. No, I can't. The last 20 years, we were winning Super Bowls with crappy cornerbacks except for Ike. Ike, baby. Ike was holding it down. Well, Willie Gay did a good job too. But Willie was almost better late in his career. But you remember, even in those Super Bowl runs, there was difficulty defending the pass at times. And now here we are with a stable of cornerbacks. Let's see if it sticks around.
So, as you mentioned, we think Artie will be gone. Sean Davis?
Oh, he's good as gone.
He'll be expendable.
So that's actually an important position for the Steelers as well. They're going to have to get a safety. I think some people might be overvaluing how high they need to pick a safety or how they need to go get one. They don't need a starter. Just a real quick thing on Terrell Edmunds, because I keep seeing tons of hate on Twitter towards Terrell Edmunds. And I think that that's so short-sighted. Is like if Terrell Edmunds is our new Bud Dupree, right? They picked him in the first round. They should not have picked him in the first round. He's not a first round safety. He doesn't know where the ball is. He doesn't even realize football played with the ball. That's part of the issue. But he played way better this year than he did last year. He made some plays knocking some passes down. He made some plays as the year went on, close to the line of scrimmage, making tackles. And if he can just be solid, if he can be Ryan Clark to Minka Fitzpatrick's Troy Polamalu, then that's great because you have him locked up for another 3 years after this, and he definitely played better than he did last year. And we've seen guys in the secondary. You know, Ike eventually became a star without being a star at the beginning, and if he can continue his ascension, that's good. Just don't expect him to get interceptions, but we got other guys for that. Would it be cool if he did get interceptions? Would it be cool if they drafted Bates or Reed, who were available at that time, two guys who do get interceptions? Yes, but if he's a solid player and he makes use of that incredible athleticism he has, then he's on a good trajectory. It's just he gets graded hard, rightfully so, because he was a first-round pick.
So this may be a surprise to you and an unpleasant one, but you know Cameron Kennedy is also a free agent.
Oh, no, we can't have that.
Modern-day Greg Warren.
That's right. And it's a 10-year contract for those guys.
Among other guys that we won't need to talk about here, Dirty Red is up, and he was mentioned as an All-Pro special teams guy.
He definitely deserves to be in that conversation. He's unbelievable on special teams. Yeah, so I don't know. We'll get further down the roster as we go later into the offseason, but you do need those special teams guys, and they lost Hayward Bay last year, and Holton filled in nicely, but is there another receiver that you find in training camp who can play special teams to the level that Holton does, but also maybe can add a little bit on offense? I don't know. So we'll see about those guys. We know that we don't want Dirty Red, you know, playing a linebacker.
Nor do we want him on any other in another uniform because of his potency.
Precisely.
We don't want to lose Dirty Red because of his potency.
No, we don't want to lose him because of his potency, and nobody wants to lose potency in general. And the good news is Blue Chew is making sure that that doesn't happen. Guys, do you remember the days when you were always ready to go? I do. Now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. Listen up. BlueChew.com, that's blue like the color blue. BlueChew brings you the first chewable with the same FDA-approved active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, so you know that they work. You can take them anytime, day or night, even on a full stomach, and since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. If you could benefit from extra function and more confidence where it counts, BlueChew is the fast and easy way to enhance your performance. Most guys talk a good game, but BlueChew helps you follow through. Blue Chew is prescribed online and ships straight to your door in a discreet package, so no in-person doctor visit, no waiting in the pharmacy, and best of all, no more awkwardness. They're made in the U.S. of A, and since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they're cheaper than a pharmacy. Right now, we've got a special deal for our listeners. If you visit BlueChew.com, you'll get your first shipment for free when you use our special promo code ARMCHAIR, A-R-M-C-H-A-I-R. All you got to do is pay $5 shipping. So again, that's BlueChew.com, promo code armchair to try it for free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice, and we thank them for sponsoring the podcast.
Sports Illustrated's Donnie Druin has a column called Steeler Maven, which is great. It's finally a place to go for Steeler news other than the usual. He has three Steelers New Year's resolutions for 2020, and we have addressed these resolutions and most of two out of the three of these, and I'll save the one we haven't for last, but just your thoughts on his a couple of them. So goal number one for 2020 is that Terrell Edmonds must improve it significantly. Duh. I guess we could say that about every player.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that. Honestly, I don't think that the Steelers' success revolves around Terrell Edmonds getting much better. Not, I mean, we actually just kind of addressed that, right? I'm like, as long as he's good and solid, the Steelers are going to be fine. Now, would it be great if he progressed? Of course, every player. But this isn't the same urgency as what we said last year with TJ Watt, where it's like, TJ Watt looks like he's on the ascension from good to great player. And at the time on the defense, they only had one great player, Cam Hayward. And when TJ Watt was making a big impact last year, it was showing like, oh, this Steelers team could actually look like a classic Steelers defense. So that was more critical to me. We also said something like Washington and Deontay Johnson need to play well this year because there are no other receivers besides Juju Smith-Schuster. That was critical. So, no, I don't think that Edmonds' progression is overly impactful on how well the Steelers are going to do. I trust that he will continue to get better, but there's guys like, I mean, the number one thing we all know is Ben's elbow. How much is that going to heal? That's really something to me. And then, you know, will they have a starting running back who can stay in the game? That kind of thing. But no, I don't think that it's the most important thing.
Resolution number two, retain two of three players, Bud, Javon Hargrave, and Mike Hilton. Two out of three of them.
I think they're only going to get one out of three. It's almost impossible to get all of them, right? Javon Hargrave is good. He's pretty much good as gone. Just because of the position he plays, fits better in a 4-3. So he's going to get massive money that the Steelers aren't going to be able to match somewhere else. They already have guys to fill in for him as it is. You have so much money tied up in Hayward and Tuitt. So, like, I don't even think that it's realistic to get him. If they get one of those three, I'd be happy. It'd be a bummer if the only one you keep is Hilton, but hey, I mean, then your cornerback group is still is really strong. So, man, I don't mean to be negative towards the article. If you got two or three, awesome, love it. But no, I don't. I think that the Steelers can still weather the storm if they lose two of those guys.
I guess you're saying, yeah, realism. Well, first, is that true? I don't actually agree with what you were saying before that you've got Sutton in the wings. He may not be the sort of the run protection at the level that Hilton is, but you've got somebody in the wings.
Yeah, I mean, you're never going to – I mean, it'd be great if you lose Antonio Brown. It's like, well, good thing we have DeAndre Hopkins behind him. You're never going to have that, you know. But Yeah, with the defensive line, we already know why they're going to lose Hargrave. Bud's the big question. I still think that this team, even if they lost all three of those guys, I still think the team's in the running. Because if Ben comes back at 75% of himself, then you have a halfway decent starting quarterback, and then you should have a pretty good offense and still a very good defense, even if they're not as good as they were this year. So, yeah, I don't think that the Steelers' success relies critically on that. If they could keep Bud, that would be a huge step. But then again, you might keep Bud with at the cost of making the offense worse by losing a lot of guys. So, I don't know.
You know what really scares me, though? It's not having the other side of the line locked down with Bud. We've seen when Bud was average,
exactly.
I mean, it was just such a weak point. And that was out without Minka. I don't know, but you definitely need to have the pressure that those guys brought this year. I'd be really afraid to lose it. I think he's such a key to next year's defense.
Yeah, I'd be really afraid to lose him too. But honestly, I still think that they'd be a good defense without him, because you're talking about the years when he wasn't that good. Well, they had crap at every single position besides Cam Hayward and TJ and Tuitt barely even plays, and Hargrave, they barely even put him in the game at the time. Now, if you lose Bud, is your defense going to get worse? Yes, but it might not be that much worse, because you got to think, Devin Bush hasn't even scratched the surface of what he could be as a player. Like, what if Devin Bush is a Pro Bowl or an All-Pro type guy next year? Well, then that's a new stud that we are not even accounting in. That's a new stud for next year who sort of wasn't part of the defense this year. Was he playing this year? Yeah, but he wasn't the superstar version. That's like saying if we had rookie TJ Watt on the team this year. You know what I'm saying? So I think that even if they lose Bud, they still have Minka, Cam, Tuitt, Watt, Nelson, Sutton, maybe Hilton, Hayden, and it's enough where it's like, oh, they're not going to be totally screwed. Do I want to lose them? No.
Okay, one last resolution, and we'll get out of here. Finding Ben Roethlisberger's successor.
I just vehemently disagree with every part of this article. Okay, first off, does he cover the Steelers? Like, because it's not going to happen. They've already said that Ben's playing next year. They've traded their first-round pick. They're in a Super Bowl window right now. There's no chance they're taking a second-round quarterback. And if we know anything, the chances of you getting a quarterback, a franchise quarterback outside the first round are slim to none. Oh, Russell Wilson and Tom Brady and Dak Prescott, who went 8-8, they were all in different rounds. That's like three out of a million. Like, if you're going to take the success, you got to take the next guy. I've been railing against this concept for years. No team gets the Favre to Rodgers, the luck that the Colts got with Peyton to Luck, what Bill Walsh and the 49ers got with Montana to Young. And you could even say, like, who knows how Young would have developed outside of the scheme of an offensive genius like that. So I don't know what people are watching where you have the next star quarterback waiting behind the last one. You got to go all in for a Super Bowl run. I do think what's more critical than finding his successor is having a decent backup quarterback. And I would love to bring in someone like a Tyrod Taylor, who, you know, I've spoken about. He's not like a starting quarterback, but he's someone who can go in and at least maybe score a touchdown once a game. But they're not going to have the money for that. And Mike Tomlin doubled down saying Mason Rudolph's the backup quarterback. So, yeah, no, I don't think that that's critical, especially towards next year if you're talking about a successor. Is next year a huge roll of the dice? 100%, yeah. Because we all know Ben doesn't treat his body the same way that Brady and Breeze do, and he's coming back from a majorly invasive surgery on his arm. So it's not a guaranteed thing that I'll come back. But I will say this, too. He might be a cheese doodles commercial, but he has much more physical talent than Breeze and Brady have to start with. So, you know, hey, maybe get back in there and start chucking him around. But, yeah, pretty much next season relies on how healthy is he, how effective can he be, because I think that there are some pieces around him.
All right, everybody. Hit us up on Twitter at Steelers Outpost. Shoot us an email at SteelersOutpost@gmail.com. Thanks for listening. Until next week, go Steelers.
Okay, bye-bye.
We are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.